We are going to go through two chapters today. They're both kind of short. 39th chapter and the 40th chapter of book of Genesis.
Now Yosef had been brought down to Egypt. And Potiphar, the officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Yosef, and he became a successful man. He was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Yosef found favor in his sight and attended him. And he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Yosef's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had, in house and field. So he left all that he had in Yosef's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. Now Yosef was handsome in form and appearance, and after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Yosef and said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master is no concern about anything in the house, and he has put me in charge of everything. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything for me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And she spoke to Yosef day after day. He would not listen to her, to lie beside her, or to be with her. But one day, when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to them, "See, he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house." Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came in to me to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house." As soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, "This is the way your servant treated me," his anger was kindled. And Yosef's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Yosef and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Yosef in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Yosef's charge, because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made him succeed. Sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. And he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the prison where Yosef was confined. The captain of the guard appointed Yosef to be with them, and he attended them. They continued for some time in custody. And one night they both dreamed, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison. Each his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. When Yosef came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. So he asked for his officers who were with them in custody of his master's house, "Why are your faces downcast today?" They said to him, We have had dreams, and there is no one to interpret them. And Yosef said to them, Do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me. So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Yosef and said to him, In my dream, there was a vine before me, and on the vine there were three branches. As soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and the clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into the Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. Then Yosef said to him, This is its interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly, when you were his cupbearer. Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit. When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable, he said to Yosef, I also had a dream. There were 3 cake baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head. And Yosef answered and said, This is its interpretation. The 3 baskets are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you. On the 3rd day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, as Yosef had interpreted to him. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Yosef, but forgot him.
Any thoughts? Any ideas? Any comments? So everybody understands the story, right? Some of your translations have different words. Yes.
I think it's interesting that the bread and wine are there in the butler.
And that's in the 40th chapter, right? I want you to take note on something. Yes, Sean. We'll talk about the 3 days and the other 3 days.
3 days is death, and the other one's restoration.
Yes, way up there, down there. Yes.
The baker was the one that had a dream about bread, and he was the one that was hung up on a tree, just like Jesus is the bread, and he was hung up on a tree.
That's a real simple to understand that story, right? So we're knowing this is pointing towards something. And we'll find out a little more in detail. What about the first chapter? Nothing to talk about? Should we just jump to the 40th chapter and ignore? Okay. Oh! Something about adultery. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, okay. I guess we should talk about that. Yes?
Well, one thing is we know that obeying God's laws was still in Joseph by that issue. And a second thing is it's always dark before the dawn. God was preparing him for something. But at that time, I think Joseph was feeling pretty bereft of anything positive. It all went bad.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to break off from the Torah for a little while in the future. Not immediately. The book of Job is an incredible book to understand. This is the 3rd time this issue came up about Job, and I'm going to have to spend some time and explain to you, and we'll go through it detail by detail to understand what it is all about. It's a very, very fascinating book, and it is a prophetic book in one way. Yes.
I'm just noticing there where Yosef said that, you know, how can I commit such a great sin against God?
Elohim.
Yeah, so I mean, it's interesting that there's still elements of Torah that's involved before Moshe. You know, I'd like to hear more about that.
As we advance in the story about Joseph, there's very interesting things that we ourselves as human beings would say, why'd you do that for? But we have to ask ourselves, is it just The actions of Joseph, or is it the actions of the creator of heaven and earth upon Joseph? All right, so we had to find out what was the purpose. Now, we had learned the previous chapter, I hope you remember this, that there was a certain thing that transpired and brought forth evidence of talking about the Messiah himself. Right? And now we're in this 39th chapter and 40th chapter. And it's not really a reflection of the man named Joseph. It's a reflection of what God is doing. Everything in Genesis, the whole book, is the mind and thought and actions and deeds of the creator of heaven and earth. There's not an incident he did not have his hands in when we read everything in very fine detail and breaking it down and find out why God wants. He said, in the Bereshit, I told you the beginning and I told you the end. So we need to pay close attention to all the events that took place with individual people to find out exactly what it is that God is telling us, showing us, revealing to us. And any one of us we wish, well, I wish I knew the mind of God. It's right there in the book of Genesis. He tells you how he thinks, how he feels, how he responds, and his actions are all over the place in the book of Genesis. And this is not any different. Remember, Joseph had the dreams? They were not dreams that Joseph had. They were dreams that God put into his mind. He didn't understand the dreams yet. And we'll find out later he understood. That's even farther down the line than what we can imagine. It's talking about the action of the Messiah, not the action of Joseph. And we'll talk about that as we go on farther down the line of Joseph. Some of you have heard what Daniel has been teaching, my son Daniel, and how the prophets talk more about the Messiah than it does anybody else. What did Yeshua say to the Sanhedrin and the Pharisees? In it you think you have life. I am the one that is written about. Everything in the prophets written about the Messiah, everything's written in Genesis about the Messiah, Exodus, Numbers, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, you'll find it as we keep on going. And the reason why I think God is letting us understand things is because maybe there is a time schedule that he is on. And we just have to kind of go with it. We'll talk about the first verse here first. Because there's a misunderstanding about a certain word in Hebrew. And I want to talk about it because it's very important. Pontifier, by the way, means what? Belonging to the Son. S-U-N. That's what his name means. Now, in the previous chapter, we know that the Ishmaelites bought Joseph, but then the Midianites is the one that sold Joseph to Potiphar. And in the reading, he just got to reading here, is that the Ishmaelites brought him. They didn't sell him. It was the Midianites that actually sold Joseph. There was a kind of big party going on, I guess, between wheelers and dealers, of merchants, basically the merchants, what they were, they are. And the next thing is called an officer. This word has been translated a lot of times in the Bible as a eunuch. Now, in our first immediate response, we hear the word eunuch. What is our immediate first thought? The man's not a man anymore. All right? Now, we come into this particular story, and he's called a eunuch in your translation of some English language. But he has a wife. He has a wife. So we have to say, okay, what does that word really mean? In Hebrew, the word means that which cuts off. Now, this particular officer is the one in charge of what's called the guards. Remember that word, guards? And what is a guard? In Hebrew, the word guards in this particular location represents the one who executes people, cuts them off. So when we talk about that old English word of eunuch, we have moved it so far forward to modern times, we don't really understand what it meant in Hebrew and Aramaic or any other language back then. But over 90% of the time, including all the book of Esther, these were not men who didn't have something removed from them. They were the ones in charge of execution. They all were called leaders, bosses, officers. And there's only one place in the entire Bible, that's in Isaiah, only one place in the entire Bible, and that's in Isaiah, that talks about the eunuch that is dry. Only one place. That case, he was cut off. All right, you understand what I'm saying? So when we use this word, why it's important is because we have a tendency to label things as they really are in English and not really understand what it meant in Hebrew, the one who cuts it off. In this particular case, this is an officer who cut off people. What did he do with them? He was an executor, one who kills people. He was the one that, when the Pharaoh said, now kill him, guess who killed him? An officer, or a eunuch, we call that in modern English, but it means the one who cuts off, does the killing. All right? We won't call that today, and when a person has to, okay, pull the lever for electrical execution, we don't call him a eunuch, do we? But technically, he is. All right? He's just executed somebody. So that's important to know, because this is important because that's whom Joseph was brought to. A very powerful leader, very prominent, and he was the one to carry out because he was a captain of the guards, or captain of the ones who execute. So he was put in the hands of a killer. Put it in your terminology today. He is put in the hands of a deadly man that by his will, not by his will, he had to have permission from the king, from this case of Pharaoh. He couldn't just automatically execute people. He was captain of the executors, and they had to wait for the order to come down, like we would have today. Judges make a decision, and then someone else will do the killing. They don't kill him, and they come back to the judge and say, "By the judge, I just killed him." Because all of a sudden, you broke the law. You broke the will of, in this case, Pharaoh. And he comes down here now, and it's very fascinating. We go down here to verse 2. You know, we advance to verse 2. Very interesting here. It says, Yahweh was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian, Potiphar. And his master saw, what did the master see? Oh, that Yahuwah was with him, and Yahuwah made all that he did to prosper in his hand. Now this man in charge, who bought Joseph, now is becoming a wealthy man. Does that make sense? This guy who has the power to execute by the order of Pharaoh, as in the story the next chapter talks about, here this particular individual, and it says here, verse 4, yes?
So the Egyptian saw Yahuwah, so the yep. Egyptian has an idea of the delusion, that reputation.
I'm sorry, what?
He has an idea of the reputation of the delusion?
No. That's not what this is about.
Well, he saw him, so how would he know and recognize him?
Good question. How would Potiphar know that Yahuwah was the one that was blessing Jacob, and he, Potiphar, was being blessed by that very same Yahuwah? How would he know that? He was known as the what? What was Potiphar's name? What does it mean? Belonging to the sun. He worshipped a different Elohim. as we get into the story, you're going to find something that Joseph is connected with. That very same S-U-N. And you have to know why. It's not a mystery. If we come to say, what is it, God, you had in mind? Why are you telling me this? Why are you saying, this story does not make sense at all. Because later on, we find something very interesting with Joseph. And we have to go there for a minute. And so Joseph, verse 4, found grace in his sight. Now, the reason why his master saw that Joseph's God, Yahuwah, was blessing Joseph in all he handled and touched. And Potiphar, I mean, if you're a businessman, what would you do? Your number one man is making you money. What'd you do? Kill him? I said, keep going. What do you do? Keep going, you know? You do what you want to do and bless what you want to do. Worship what you want to worship. However, you know, I'm thankful. And he got favor. You know, grace is a biblical terminology. You know that, don't you? Do you know what favor, you know what grace means in Hebrew? Favor. Simple as that. The other word, favor, in front of the word grace, that's a different word. It means one who found, favor. So this is kind of bad in some of your English. It says found grace. It reads as, what was it says now? He found favor and grace. The word found favor is one word, meaning he found something. What did he find? Who gave Joseph grace? How did Joseph know that it was Yahuwah that gave him grace? He had a dream. Doesn't say here. How would he know that?
Because he made him prosperous.
I'm sorry, what?
He made him, Yahweh made Joseph prosperous.
Because he was working for an executor. And now this executor, hey, I like this guy. And so it put him in charge of everything, right? Charge of everything the man had. He became the number two man in that household, right? And he says he gave him to become the overseer. And the overseer is nothing more than one who is the master. He takes charge. He takes care of. And he handles everything that Potiphar owned. Except for his wife. So you can imagine. Now I want you to think about this, because if we go into the next chapter, you'll see a pattern here. And we'll have to explain the patterns we go through. Joseph was given the highest possible position that he could receive from this man who was the captain of those who execute people. Gave him complete blanket coverage. And as the story goes on, and it's that time that came to pass, okay, his master, Potiphar, remember, had a wife, right? And lo and behold, she just lusted after him. I guess he's very handsome. He's a very good-looking guy, you know. Today we probably might call him a sex idol, you know. In our modern terminology in English, we have from Hollywood. But it's just a very handsome guy, and he looked good. And he said, now, oh, I can't do this. Now, as we watch it carefully how this story folds, we're going to learn a little bit more about Elohim in this particular point. And the first thing he says, I can't do that. I can't come to you because it would be a sin. Now, it wasn't wickedness. It's called sin. What is sin? Coming short of what God wants you to do. Falling short. All right? What's transgression? I'm breaking it. What is iniquity? I'm deliberately doing it because I don't like it. What is that? sins, transgressions, and iniquities. So Joseph said, I can't go against Elohim on this one. And he used the word Elohim. We'll talk about that a little later in the next chapter. And of course, it came to a time in verse 11, very fascinating. We'll talk about it. It's very fascinating here. Now let's go back to verse 10. Then it was that as she spoke to Joseph day by day, and there was a continuous process trying to get him to capitulate, that he did not heed her, pay attention to her at all, ignored her, literally ignored her. Not a very nice guy, right? The boss's wife, he's ignoring her completely. Now it happened, something took place. What happened? All the men in the house were not in the house. Uh-oh. Now, why were not the men in the house? Who was in charge of telling the men what to do, where to go, how to do it, and your job? Joseph. So the men were out doing what Joseph told them to do. Uh-oh. Right? This tells us a couple of things real quickly. One story. She took advantage of it. Simple as that. She knew all no men were in the house. Didn't say women were in the house. Women would be in the house, but not in her place. And so no men were in the house. And of course, she grabbed him. She took something from him. And what did she take? His garment. We'll talk about a garment. You know what a garment is? Oh, this was a garment of the second highest man in that house. When they wore garments in those days, they didn't wear things that you could not identify who they are. When you're in the military and you see an officer coming, he's got egg on his face, on his board, you know exactly who was in charge. The same thing a police officer has, the very same thing. You know exactly who's in charge. They wear certain garments. All right? They're not wearing, you know, jeans and blue jeans and some cowboy hat. No, they're wearing something that identifies who they are. I'll tell you this, as we get farther into the story of Joseph, you'll see that very same, not that garment, but another garment he wears that identifies who he is. And remember, he had a robe of many colors. That's cool, horrible translation on that one. And many of you know that by now. Does that have to do with color? It signified something about Joseph that the rest of the brothers didn't signify about them. Remember, Joseph was the only one that, of the brothers that had dreams. Like Jacob had dreams. None of the other brothers ever had dreams. So he comes on down, and she uses the interesting word. And there she's got this garment, right? Now, verse 14. And she called the men that were supposed to be in the house, called them back in again, right? And she has explained what this garment's from. I mean, every man knew whose garment was. It was their boss. It was their boss's garment. That's what she had in her hand. Now, she couldn't just stash it and hope no one knows. She's got the evidence. Now, all she had to do is cover up her mess. It's very interesting to see he, meaning her husband, has brought unto us, and it says a Hebrew, to mock us. Very interesting terminology, by the way. We'll go to that in a minute. And he came to lie down with me, and lo and behold, I yelled out with a loud voice. Okay? Hebrew. In Hebrew, I mean, in the actual language there, in the text, it says, in a sense, and he, her husband, had brought unto us one from beyond to mock us. The word Hebrew means one from beyond. It breaks down. It's a region that is beyond where, of course, they were in Egypt, right? It breaks down farther to a region that you cross over on the opposite side. And it comes down, the final word is to pass over or to go through, to bring or to carry away or to make something different. Now, who was the first one called a Hebrew? Abram was the very first one to be called a Hebrew. Why was he called a Hebrew? He was the one that crossed over. What did he cross over from? Ur, which is on the other side of the river. Right? And so now we have this unusual word coming up. And it's very fascinating that that the word Hebrew shows up. And a lot of people think it comes from some man's name. No, it doesn't even come close to that man's name. Keep breaking it down, keep breaking it down. You'll find out the one that crossed over. One from beyond, beyond the other side of the river. What I'm telling you is this. This is my thinking. I could be way off. I have no idea what I'm talking about. However, Abram's family looked differently than other people around about them. And he crossed over, and everybody could recognize that Abram wasn't a Canaanite. He wasn't a Hittite. He wasn't a Perizzite. He was one who crossed over. He looked different. He didn't look the same. Now, I'm not talking race. Don't get it. That race is something that has to do with evolution, and I deny it 100%. There's no such thing as race. So now Joseph, who was, quote, handsome. Remember that? Remember Abram's wife was 65 years old, and men just thought, wow, a fantastic lady. I think I'll take her as a wife, remember? At that age, she didn't look like an old lady. She looked a lot younger. And Abram probably himself looked a lot younger. The characteristic of that particular group of people that God has called. God calls things that are small, insignificant, and he builds them up. And we know that Abram's life, he died a very wealthy man, and he died with great honors and great respect. So now we come in here to Joseph, goes all the way down to his life. We're at this point, and we're going to say, okay, what happened? Well, we make a long story short. Verse 20. So he put Joseph into prison because you couldn't execute him. That the Pharaoh gave him no orders to execute. So he just put him in prison or in a dungeon. And it says here, verse 20, and Yahweh saw that Joseph was and shown him mercy. Really? He's in prison. Mercy. We all know what mercy is, don't we? Especially in English. He showed him kindness. He showed him favor. He showed him something. And what happened? The man in charge of the prison. Oh, wow. This man's different than anybody else. He's got respect. He's got honor. And he is shouldn't even be here. But he can't overrule the thing. And so what did this man do? He made him charge. The man ran the prison. Well, the czar of the prison was out taking a nap or going home and, no, I'll see you next month, next week. He knew Joseph was going to handle everything. Now, I don't know how prisons are operated in America at all. I know you use the word warden. The warden has an awful lot of guards. But in this particular case, Joseph was the guard. Quote, warden. Quote, all that kind of stuff. Now we go to the fourth chapter, next chapter. Now, two things took place here now. We kind of know the story. We don't have to go through the detail. Some of your translations have him that he, one of them was called a butler. The reason why they translated it as a butler, because the butler is a little bit more authority than the baker. The one takes care of the kitchen, and the other takes care of everything else, including wine. The cook doesn't make the decision what wine. It's the butler that makes the decision of what wine you should use and what wine you should not use, because the butler, or the wine called the winemaker, we'll talk about that a little more later on. But basically, the word just breaks down real simple. And it says it's the male that was really responsible for everything under the sun, and all the staff and everything else under Pharaoh, and taking care of the wine. Now, there are some people in America that have so much wine, they're down deep in a cellar, and they have someone take care of that wine to make sure the temperature's always the same. So that's what this guy was. He was in charge of making sure that the wine was at the right thing with the Pharaoh liked. Well, he had a dream. A weird dream. Verse 9, and the chief butler, or the man in charge of everything except the bakery, told his dream. And dream says, okay, tell me what it is. And so he does. Verse 10. Now listen carefully to what I have written down here. You may not have it written in your translation. Right? And in the vine, three branches. Let me repeat myself. In the vine, three branches. In the vine. The vine has branches coming out from it, right? And the branch is the one that produces the wine. And Yahshua said, I am the vine, and you are the branches. Now, as we continue on with this story, I want to pay attention to what this guy said he dream was telling him. Brought it budded, number one. Two, blossomed. Three, grapes. Three things occurred. Interesting. One, two, three. Does that have any meaning at all? Apparently not, right? And of course, he said, I gave the cup, the Pharaoh's cup, I gave to him with the wine in it. I crushed it. That was his dream. And what did Joseph say? Well, the three branches represent, 3 days. Something always occurs on the third day. Life or death. You'll find that written in the Bible all over the place. Life, then death. Or life or death. However you wish to phrase it. Now, what about the other guy? The baker. The one that's responsible. He's a chief baker of all the bakers, or of all the things that make done. And he had a very unusual dream too, right? Remember what it was? Oh, three baskets. And lo and behold, some birds came and ate some of it from all three baskets. He only took it from one. The other two were not touched. And of course, we know you're going to get killed. We know that story, right? Now, let me ask you a question. I know this is something that some people have a hard time with. It came to pass the third day of Pharaoh's birthday. You know, oh, Pharaoh's birthday's again. No, let's talk about it. That's not issue about birthday. It's 3 days that matters. And the third day, what took place? Oh, life was first, and death came afterwards. Did you notice that? Life first, then death. Don't you find that interesting? Shouldn't it be the other way around? Why shouldn't it be the other way around? What remained? The other two baskets. What do you think they meant? It doesn't say. It says that all of them had different kind of breads in it, foods in it, different kind of foods. It wasn't just bread. It was all sorts of meals that you'd have. And he says, and it's very fascinating to stop and think. Now, we're at this particular point in time to saying, why is it that life came first, then death? Do you have an answer? Have you thought about that? Isn't it a mystery? Yes, Ellie.
Well, there was one third that was killed. Does that have anything to do with Ezekiel?
Fascinating. I didn't look at it from that point of view. That's interesting. Anybody else have any thoughts?
Didn't God give Adam life and then later he did the wrong thing and went to death?
And went to death. Life comes first, death comes secondly. Now, what happened to the Messiah? Life came first, death came second. Now remember, it's a basket containing what we would use the word, horrible translation, bread. And we have the Messiah saying, I am the of life, come down from. And guess what happened to that bread? It was ripped to pieces and torn apart. The man was torn and killed. That's the blessing that came down. Life first, he came down, but now he's dead. This does not tell you his resurrection. This tells you, oh, there comes the Messiah. And now that bread, quote, of life. And he said, this is my life, my body. It is destroyed. It is torn apart and it is killed for you. Take it. Yes.
Well, two chapters ago, we were talking about the signs of Judah, which is the signet, the cord,
and the two sons.
The 13. Okay. But Joseph has different pictures. He has three coats. He has the coat of mixed coat. Then we have this coat, which identified him.
Yep.
And then Messiah's coat.
That identified the Messiah.
Okay. But when Messiah has to get out of town, Rachel's crying, not Leah. It's Leah's kids being killed, not Rachel.
Correct.
And Rachel's kids, the tribes of Joseph, the only way they have home is through the door of the Messiah. So you've got another. This is not Judah's kids. These are Joe's kids. These prophecies, to me, are looking at Joe's kids.
I mean,
and
this
the Messiah.
Chapter? In this chapter?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I went really fast. Joe.
I didn't think about that. I would, the butler and the baker are representative of Joseph's kids. The story. All right, go ahead.
I was wondering, what did the baker do that was so evil?
Makes no difference. We don't know, and it's unimportant for us to know. If God wanted us to know, he would tell us. But he didn't. And so we are left in the hoshech about it. So let's stay in the hoshech and let it go on. Some things we should not try to analyze when it's not written. People analyze anything they want, believe anything they want, that's hunky-dory. But when it comes to the Torah, when I read this thing, I don't add, nor do I take away. I just say that's what it says, and I don't go beyond that point. You all know that from me, right? I know a lot of people have said something, they did something wrong, in order for it to happen. And when I get in the book of Job, you're going to learn something else from me. I read what it says. I don't bring in anything that doesn't say what you may think it says. All right, so I find this very fascinating that now we're at the death of the Messiah at this point. Now, we're waiting for the resurrection. You know what Joseph asked the butler? Remember me? Guess what? You think he's a forgetful guy?
Yeah.
No. God, it wasn't time. Joseph could not come to power until he was 30 years old. 30 years old. When did the Messiah begin to preach? 30 years old. And not before. At this point in time, we don't have what it is. The few next few chapters, it'll tell us, because I think it's a year later or 2 years later, a few years later, he was stuck in the dungeon. He stayed there. Did what he's supposed to do. He wind up being the, quote, chief executor, end of quote, because the word guard is used there in relationship to him. Which, in a sense, that's what he became later in life. Very powerful man that could wipe people's death and kill them. He had that second most powerful man in all of Egypt was him. We'll learn that as we keep on going. Okay, any comments, any thoughts? So we're at a very interesting end. Now, at the 40th chapter, I want you to pay attention to the very first verse. What does it say? The very first verse. It came to pass after these things. From the 40th chapter all the way to the end of Genesis, the name of Yahweh is no longer mentioned. Just Elohim. So now, what does it tell you? We're getting another witness of something. The book of Genesis is torn apart and written by different people at different times, and the style of Hebrew writing is so radically different from one to the other, once you begin to recognize it, you spot it and you understand it. The very first chapter of Genesis is written using the word Elohim. The very next chapter uses the word Yahweh. Oh, what is it showing us? Witness. Someone's testifying and telling us. When we look at Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and even John, but Luke took testimony from Peter. They all have different kind of ways of telling the story. Some more detail, some not. But there are four witnesses right there in the book of New Testament. Yes.
I was just going to say, you were asking about Elohim and Yahweh. The names Elohim was always about judgment, and Yahweh was about the grace and mercy?
No. Because it is Elohim who created the seventh day. And that's very, very important. It's the place of dwelling place where he is at. Yahweh does not mean destruction. But Yahweh was known as that. El Shaddai. That's the one that's deluger. That's the one that destroys. So Yahweh comes on the scene, and we find that he is the one that destroyed the world. Very powerful being, wouldn't you think? There is a difference between and why they use two different names for two different reasons, for two different situations. Here, from the 40th chapter on, we're going to learn a little bit more about Elohim and how he or they, or how you want to use the terminology, is in power now. And we'll tell you why. It has to do with Joseph becoming, quote, the right-hand man of Pharaoh. You got that? Now, what does the right hand of God, what is it all about? compared to the left hand of God? He's got two hands, right? One's right, one's left. What is the difference between those two?
Isn't the right hand always represent power and authority?
Elohim, what's one? Left one?
The right. Always represents power.
No! The right one is the one that brings in and shelters them, and the left hand comes and does the killing. The sword of God is on the left side. The right hand is means the Messiah is bringing you in unto his Father's bosom while his Father's killing people, in a sense. That's what that's all about. We have the... Okay. There are four known, but not written biblical. There are four known, well-named... It's Michael, Gabriel,
Archangel.
And who was in front and who was in back? Who was on the right and who was on the left? Michael was on the left. He's going to stand up and he's going to fight. It says there in Book of Daniel, he is going to fight. What does Gabriel do? He's the messenger. He comes and he gives the message over and over and over again what God's going to be doing. What did the Messiah come to? To preach the gospel, to give the message. Yes.
You're saying God's left-handed then.
Because God's ambidextrous.
Because if you put me out on the battlefield, my shield would be in my left hand and my sword would be in my right.
No.
And I would be killing with my right hand and my
But see, we always do things backward from God. We're made that. But if you were left-handed, it'd be the other way around.
Of course. That's what I'm saying. You're saying God's left-handed.
Yeah. But if he's right-handed, it's something else. It has nothing to do with whether he's right-handed or left-handed. It's what's on his right side, what's on his left side, what's in front, and what's behind. There are four beings surrounded his throne. Remember that. I got called quits. It's another subject matter altogether different. But I want you to pay attention from the fourth chapter on. The subject matter changes. And this is not a negative story. Though it looks like the rest of the book is bad news for the Egyptians. Pay attention as we continue. The Egyptians were greatly blessed under Joseph.